with the left, the left. You will fake, so I'm gon' drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You will fake, so I'm gon' drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left.
Waka, waka, motherfucker. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. I was going to say to the secular talk show, but that doesn't roll off the tongue very smoothly. You could say welcome to secular talk. You could say welcome to the Kyle Kalinske show. But if you say welcome to the secular talk show, that sounds really weird. I have quite a bit of information for you today. Corporate Joe Manchin, we're back discussing him, so get your barf bags ready. You know what it just occurred to me? I don't understand. So when you go on a plane and there's like a barf bag, they call it a barf bag, but isn't it just like a regular-ass paper bag that they're calling a barf bag? It's not like the company that makes those bags makes them with you throwing up in the bag in mind, right? Am I wrong about that? this is the first time I've ever thought about barf bags for an extended period. We have Bernie Sanders. We're going to discuss his interesting comments on single payer. Do I have a disagreement with the Bernster? Well, you're going to have to wait and see. Then Politico had an article about Donald Trump that puts his disgusting, disastrous presidency into perspective. And I'll show you exactly why. I mean, this really is, the article just shows you the parameters of the debate that we're currently dealing with. And you couldn't get a better example of just how far we've come in the wrong direction. That sentence was kind of clunky, but I think you understand what I'm trying to say. Police militarization is back. That's unfortunate. And I'll tell you a story about a woman who has to eat out of a dumpster to afford her husband's health care. Yeah. Really bad stuff. Okay, so let's get started, and we'll do that with Joe Manchin. Corporate Joe Manchin is back, and he's going to weigh in on the health care debate here. So look at this tweet from Claire Foran. Manchin says, if Dems make single-payer a litmus test, that's as bad as what Republicans did with repeal. He's equating Democrats being all in on Medicare for All with Republicans being all in on repeal Obamacare. Those things aren't equal, Joe. Those things aren't easy. See, in Joe Manchin's mind, because he's the most corporate of the corporate Democrats, he thinks, like, here I am. Aren't I in such a comfortable position in between these two insane, bought and owned political parties? I'm so reasonable. I'm a Democrat who agrees with Republicans almost all the time. So I'm, like, right in the middle of this spectrum. Isn't it great? So comfy here being right in the middle. Except, no, those parties are both pretty far right wing. So you're just far right wing, and you're a corporate sellout, and that's why we call you Corporate Joe Manchin, because your record speaks for itself. All the money you've taken from big money donors, from PACs, you do the bidding of your donors. You're not even really a Democrat, and this goes to show you. As bad as other corporate Democrats even are, at least they're not going to say, oh, Medicare for All is equal to the Republicans pushing for full repeal of Obamacare. They're not going to do a false equivalence on that front. Usually what you get from corporate Democrats is, you know, in theory, I'd support Medicare for All, but the problem is the theoretical world isn't the same as the real world, and we're not starting from scratch. So since we're not starting from scratch, we can't really go in that direction. So I like it, but I don't know if I can do it. That's what you get from standard corporate Democrats. Joe Manchin is so stupid that he says shit like this. Yes, a full repeal of Obamacare. So taking the few fixes that were made in Obamacare, rolling the clock back on that, so having millions more people uninsured, going back to the system that was so bad that it merited immediate reform in the first place, that is equal to covering everybody and lowering costs and catching up to every other modern nation. God, he's so stupid. Okay, let me give you the specifics of what he said here. While Manchin says he's open to learning more about single payer, he also predicts that if Democrats make support for the policy, which has no chance of passing under Republican Congress, a litmus test, that will make it harder to pursue bipartisan fixes to the Affordable Care Act. That would be as bad, if not worse, than what Republicans did by not doing anything to improve the law and getting caught in a quagmire, Manchin said, referring to the failed and unpopular Republican repeal plan that the Congressional Budget Office found would have stripped millions of Americans of insurance coverage. Okay, so that's also incorrect. He's saying, oh, come on, man, if you guys push for Medicare for all, then that's going to make it harder to do fixes to Obamacare. That's his argument. Except, no, Joe, what is the end goal of trying to do health care reform? Well, the only way we're going to cover everybody and reduce our costs at the same time is to do a Medicare for all system. So all this talk about, well, we need to improve Obamacare. Yeah, and you improve Obamacare by pushing in the direction, incrementally, towards Medicare for all. That's the only way to improve Obamacare, where we actually get things done the right way and cover everybody and reduce costs. There's no question about that. That's not up in the air. That's the only way to go. Every other modern nation has one version or another of single payer, and they kick our ass when it comes to the empirical research on various healthcare systems and who's the best. And then also, this goes to show you, he knows nothing about negotiation. He's like, oh, you're making it harder for us to pursue fixes to Obamacare by us pushing for Medicare for all. The only way you're ever going to get any fixes is if you play hardball. So you need to, if you're not going to make your case, if the Democrats are not going to make what's supposed to be the Democratic case, nobody else is going to fucking do it. The way you, get shit done, for example, if you're going to buy a car, they say the car costs $21,000. You go, no, I'll pay $18,000. They go, whoa, that's less than what we own it for. I don't know, we can't do that. That you're being unreasonable here. Okay, but what we'll do is we'll come down to $20,000, and you go $19,000. So that's how you get shit done. So this is what Obama failed at originally. You know, they didn't push for Medicare for all. They didn't even push for public option. They pushed for it for like a day and a half, and they said, oh, I cave, and let's do your idea, Republicans. Because Obamacare is an individual mandate-style system that keeps the private health insurance companies intact and in control, and that means that the Democrats ended up proposing the Republican system. They proposed the right-wing reform. The Heritage Foundation wrote policy papers about individual mandates. So this is their idea. So you don't know how to negotiate, you're immediately caving to the right and giving them whatever they want instead of making your own fucking case. And furthermore, on the issue of Medicare for all, I wouldn't just, use a hard line solely for negotiating purposes so I could maybe get a public option or a Medicare buy-in or something like that. No, I would say Medicare for all because I actually mean we're only going to do Medicare for all and that's it. Medicare is a program, 77% approval rating in the U.S. About 60% of the American people want Medicare for all now. So, what the fuck, is this a democracy or is this not a democracy? Are you going to represent the people or are you not going to represent the people? There are even independents favor Medicare for all. Democrats favor Medicare for all. There are even more Republicans that favor Medicare for all than don't favor Medicare for all. And what do you get? Mealy-mouthed corporate Democrats like Joe Manchin going, well, let's not be too extreme here by doing the correct policy that everybody wants that would actually fix the problem. We have to understand that if we push for the right policy, that's just as bad as when Republicans push for the wrong policy. Joe, those things are not equal. One is right, one is wrong. But the far right push for bad stuff, and so if we go in the so-called far left direction, it'll be bad stuff. He doesn't believe in anything. And then Joe Manchin sat down for an interview with Cenk Uygur of TYT, who's a co-founder of Justice Democrats, along with myself and Zach Exley and Shoykat Chakrabarty, and who were former top Bernie Sanders campaign officials, by the way. And he he kept doing a tap dance around the issue of Medicare for All. Hey, do you support Medicare for All? Well, you know, I think we should be open to it, and we should look into it, and we should read about it. No, 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 but do you support Medicare for All? Well, you know, it's something that should be on the table and should be discussed, but do you support Medicare for All? And then eventually his true colors come out, and he says, oh, well, there are waiting lines, and oh, they have nothing but stale talking points that aren't even true. Well, there's going to be rationing of care. There's rationing of care in the United States right now. But in the United States, we ration care based on the size of your wallet. In single-payer countries, they ration care based on need. That crazy fucking idea. So, yeah, you might have to wait a little while for an elective procedure because it's an elective procedure. So the people who need the fucking care are getting it first. And people bitch about that. Oh, the elective procedure might take like 2.5 weeks. Oh, my God, the fucking tyranny of having a system that actually takes care of people who need care the most. So they got nothing. They got nothing. Oh, the cost and oh, Canada, people coming here for their health care. Actually, there are more people that from here that go to Canada for health care. Sure, if you're a mega Saudi prince, you come to the U.S. because we have great care for the richest of the rich. But regular people, we don't. 45,000 people die every year because they don't have access to basic health care. And Joe Manchin, instead of pushing for the solution when he's supposedly part of the Democratic Party, what's supposed to be the Liberal Party, he does a false equivalence between the worst policy imaginable that strips health insurance from millions more people, leads to more people dying, is a giant tax cut for the rich. He's equating Trump care with Medicare for all. We have to beat this guy, man. I was going to say you don't get it, but you do get it. I know you get it. So we have to beat him. Paula Jean Swearengen is the answer. That's Joe Manchin's primary opponent, a Justice Democrat candidate. Listen, we have no excuse anymore. There's no excuse. You can't. We can't, you know, sit home now. Well, it wasn't a good option on the table in the ballot, and I just stayed home because no. We have a good option on the ballot. We have an ideal candidate to take down corporate Joe Manchin. The question is, are we going to do it? Are we going to turn out to the polls? I, of course, am talking to people in West Virginia specifically with that point. But for everybody else, are we going to help Paula Jean Swearengen? Are we going to spread the word? Are we going to get her name out there? Are we going to donate to her campaign? Because, again, corporate Joe Manchin takes corporate money, PAC money, lobbyist money, billionaire money, and he can run a campaign with just a handful of people donating to him. Paula Jean Swearengen, she doesn't take corporate money and PAC money. That's the whole point, because she's only beholden to the people. So we need money from the people in small-dollar donations so that she can remain true to her principles and fight for the right things. And if you don't know what she stands for, justicedemocrats.com/platform. You go see what Paula Jean Swearengen stands for. She's going to push for a new deal. She's going to push for Medicare for all. She's not going to mince words. Well, I don't know. The Republicans are extreme, and the far left is Medicare for all is equal to Trump care. Fuck off. That's not true. That's a really dumb talking point. So Paula Jean Swearengen unapologetically stands up for Medicare for all, unapologetically stands up for free college, wants a new deal to bring the jobs of the future to West Virginia. She wants to give people jobs and make them good-paying jobs of the future, green technology jobs, renewable technology jobs. Wants to get off the addiction to coal because the water in West Virginia is fucking poisoned, and Joe Manchin's not doing dick about it. He's going in the wrong direction. So Paula Jean Swearengen, you have to go to justicedemocrats.com/fight. That's where you donate to Paula Jean Swearengen. We have to win, man. I can't take doing stories like this anymore. This guy's a corporate tool and an absolute moron. We got to get rid of him. What's the point of Republican light in the Democratic Party? There's something Howard Dean said way back in the day, back when Howard Dean was actually progressive. Now I know he's a lobbyist and a corporate tool in his own right. But he was right back in the day in 2004 when he was running a Bernie Sanders-style campaign. And what did he say? I'm here to represent the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party. You understand that? So I'm not going to do the, let me fucking agree with the right-wingers and do their shitty policies because they're crazy, man. Republican politicians, not the voters. The voters oftentimes agree with us, Justice Democrats. The politicians in D.C. are out of touch. They're elitists. They're wrong about everything. They're crazy. And what does Joe Manchin say? I'm going to meet them halfway. But if you meet them halfway and they're crazy, wouldn't that make you half crazy? So what do you want, a half crazy candidate, or you want a candidate who's going to fight for the people? We all know the answer. Okay. Now, we move on. Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders spoke to the Washington Post, and he made some questionable comments. So look at this. Single payer isn't a litmus test for Dems. That's what Bernie argued. Now, to be fair to Bernie, he goes on to say, listen, it's one of many issues, and here's the deal. A Democrat can choose not to adopt the policy position of single-payer health care, but what's going to happen? They'll probably lose. He said, I'm skeptical if anybody can win on the Democratic side if they don't adopt the position of Medicare for All. So this is Bernie. Here's the best way to put it, and here's how I interpreted the entire article. You could read it for yourself at the Hill, but I interpreted it as Bernie Sanders, we're playing good cop, bad cop here, and Bernie Sanders is the good cop. So even though the Democratic establishment has spit in his eye roughly 9,000 times, Bernie Sanders keeps trying to win them over. There's a carrot and stick approach. He's the carrot. Now, what are we doing, Justice Democrats? We're not fucking around. We're the stick. We're the ones who say, no, it is a litmus test. If you don't support Medicare for All, it's a policy that 60% of the American people support. 77% of the American people support Medicare. This is something that even more Republicans want than don't want. So you have independents, Democrats, and even more Republicans support it than don't support it. And we're going to act like, oh, no, it's okay. This is one where it makes sense to have multiple opinions. But it doesn't. Do we have people who are supposed to represent us in Washington? Or do we pick them so that they can go there and spit in our eye and slap in our face and do the opposite of what we asked for? So we're not fucking around. We say, no, you need to be for Medicare for All. If you're not, get the fuck out of the way. Get out of the way. What the fuck are you doing here? But this is Bernie Sanders. Understand, he was picked by Chuck Schumer to be in Democratic leadership. So Bernie's in Democratic leadership. Bernie's running around the country trying to help the DNC, who, by the way, rigged the primary against them, it's been proven in court, even though the judge said, well, even though it's been shown that there's, quote, palpable bias against Bernie Sanders in the process, well, there's nothing that we could do because there was a fraud lawsuit against the DNC. So now it's been proven in court. They admit it. Like, yeah, no, there was palpable bias against him. So Bernie Sanders has decided, I will forgive my enemies. I will fight for the DNC and try to change the system from within and try to get them to adopt my policy positions come hell or high water, and I'm going to do it by heavily insisting and by shaping the direction of the party, by having access to the infrastructure of the party, the DNC and the top leadership in the Senate, so on and so forth. So that's why he says stuff like this. He's like, no, it is not a litmus test, but I would heavily suggest you do it, and I'm skeptical anybody can win if they don't adopt the policy position of Medicare for All. So, again, this is Bernie being a kinder, nicer, better person than we would be. Now, furthermore, when you're part of the Democratic leadership, they're not going to accept you undermining any other Democrats. They're not going to do it, even if it's somebody as bad as Joe Manchin. Take a look at when Cenk Uygur of TYT, who's a co-founder of Justice Democrats along with me and two top Bernie Sanders campaign officials, take a look at when he spoke to Elizabeth Warren. He asked Elizabeth Warren, hey, do you support primaries against Democrats? And what did she say? Even in cases of people like Joe Manchin, she goes, you know, well, I kind of like the people that we have now in the Senate. So even somebody like Elizabeth Warren, who's the second best that we have in the Senate, obviously first best being Bernie Sanders, but Elizabeth Warren was like, no, I'm friends with Joe Manchin, and I will defend him. So Bernie Sanders, he might not be as forthright in saying I will defend Joe Manchin, but he knows, since he's part of Democratic leadership, I can't come out there and shit on other Democrats when I'm in Democratic leadership. So instead, what does he do? Walks on eggshells like this. Well, you know, Medicare for All is not a litmus test because 98% of my fucking fellow politician friends don't believe in it. It's not a litmus test, but I would say that you're not in good shape if you don't support it, and I'm skeptical anybody can win if they don't go down that road. So this is Bernie Sanders playing the game from within, trying to change the system from within, trying to – it's almost like a Trojan horse effect where he's like gently massaging – okay, that sounds creepy – in the direction of, hey, guys, I'm here. You know, I'm an insider along with you guys in the Democratic Party, but wouldn't it be great if we did X? And I think Bernie Sanders, if he hasn't learned already by this point, it seems to me at some point inevitable, because he's a smart guy, that he's going to go, oh, these guys are not, you can't gently coax them in the right direction. You have to come with a fucking hammer in your hand and a chainsaw and go, bitch, here's how it's going to go down. So, and that's why, again, why we exist, why Justice Democrats exist, why you exist. And, by the way, why other third-party options exist. We, in Justice Democrats, have officially united and have allies with third parties. You know, we're working with Democratic Socialists, for example. Why? Because all we care about is the policy. So I don't care what your approach is to get the policy implemented. As long as you're fighting for the right policy, and we concluded they are. So we all came together on the People's Platform, for example. You know, Justice Democrats works with Brand New Congress, National Nurses United, Democratic Socialists, People for Bernie, Our Revolution. The list goes on and on. And we all have, you know, different approaches on how to affect change and whatnot. But the bottom line is, we're the ones who are saying, no, we're drawing a line. You support this or else. And that's why we're primary corporate Democrats. And we're saying, you don't have an option. We're going to make it so you can't win. You already can't win if we shine a light on what your voting record really is. So, look, I personally think, and this is after looking at the best possible way to go about it, I personally think the best way to win and get real populist left politicians in there is to run Justice Democrats, which means you run as a Democrat because there's just such a gigantic systemic bias against third parties that it's like swinging a hammer at your kneecap and then trying to run a marathon afterwards. It's just so hard for third-party candidates to win that it's just impractical to try to go down that path. Why would you want to make it harder for yourself to win when you can make it easier by running as a Democrat? But you run as a Democrat, take no corporate money, no PAC money, unapologetically stand for populist left positions, and say, oh, we're going to destroy the shitty corporate Democratic Party from within. So I think that's the best approach. That means, and here's where we differ with Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, is an independent, but he caucuses with the Democrats, but he's trying to make nice with the party establishment to try to coax them in the right direction policy-wise. Justice Democrats, we're not doing that. We're going, that's nice, step aside, we're going to replace you. We don't need you. We don't need your approval, corporate Democrats, Democratic establishment. You're already despised. That's why you lost 1,000 seats under Obama. That's why Hillary Clinton lost to Donald Trump, a guy with a 60% unfavorability rating. You guys have a horrendous track record. Nobody likes Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. So why the fuck do I want your approval? I want to defeat you. I'm going to get rid of Joe Manchin. We're going to get rid of the corporate Democrats. We're going to get rid of corrupt Joe Crowley. So our approach is take no corporate money, no PAC money, run within the Democratic Party to defeat the corporate Democratic Party and align ourselves with the populist left movements from outside the party and from within the party. We've calculated that's the best chance of success. If you've come to a different conclusion, that's fine. By all means, you go down whatever path you want, as long as you're fighting for Medicare for all, as long as you're fighting for free college, as long as you're fighting for a living wage and to end the wars and to end the drug war and a new deal to get infrastructure spending and a green technology revolution, so on and so forth. So, Bernie, agree to disagree. Yes, in my mind, Medicare for all is a litmus test for Democrats. Because it's not fucking hard, man. It's like a living wage. Hey, can you run as a candidate who doesn't support a living wage? No, go fuck yourself. I don't support a living wage. Oh, really? So somebody should work full-time and not make enough money to survive? The fuck is that shit? That's not a reasonable opinion. It's not like, well, you know, hey, wage slavery, for it or against it. No, fuck that. You're either for it or you're an idiot. You're either for it or you're immoral. Where's the goddamn question on something like that? This isn't hard. I can't stand it when people insist things are debatable that are not debatable. That's not fucking debatable. Living wage. Oh, yeah, let's have a discussion. What the fuck? Have a discussion about whether or not somebody's going to afford to keep the goddamn lights on, pay the water bill, and feed their kids. Get the fuck out of here with that nonsense. Yes, Medicare for All is a goddamn litmus test, and I want people to stop shying away from the idea as if it's like, that's like a Trump card, no pun intended, because I know Trump, yeah. That it's not like, hey, you have a litmus test. End of debate. No, that's not a fucking end of the debate. What is the litmus test? Remember when Bernie was asked on the campaign trail, hey, do you have a litmus test for Supreme Court justice? He was like, yes. Everybody's like, whoa, because usually that's used as a corporate media talking point to smear people. He has a litmus test. Ooh, a litmus test. Ooh. And they use that as like, oh, litmus tests are by definition bad. But what if they're not? And he's like, yeah, I have a litmus test. They have to be against Citizens United, and they have to want to be for getting money out of politics. So in other words, they can't interpret money equaling free speech because it doesn't. That's bullshit. And guess what? When he made that argument, the American people went, yeah, that's reasonable. Corporate media was like, oh, a litmus test, my goodness. Stop fucking shying away. Why shy away? There's no argument there. Just because people clutch their fucking pearls in corporate media and go, I can't believe it, doesn't mean the American people will. Can you imagine politicians unapologetically saying, yes, I have a litmus test, and Medicare for All is in it? The American people will go, what? That sounds like a good idea. Exactly. So, sorry, Bernie, but agree to disagree on this one, buddy. Look, his heart's in the right place because he's fighting for single payer more than any elected official, period. He really is. He proposes it all the fucking time. So I got nothing but love for Bernie. But this is him from within the establishment saying, hey, guys, let's go in this direction. Bernie, they're never going to come there willingly. You got to drag them kicking and screaming, and that's what we're doing. That's what you're doing, Justice Democrats. That's why we kicked up John Conyers' bill, had 72 co-sponsors. Now, what is it, over 120, something like that? I mean, it's all because of you, the pressure you put on them. You called your congresspeople. You said, support it or else. You said, we're not playing around here. If you don't support this, you're going to lose your seat. You signed a petition. We showed them the number of people on the petition. They went, oh, fuck. We're going to lose if we don't support this. So you drag them kicking and screaming. You're never going to play nice with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and get them to go, oh, yes, I guess I support the right position now. No, because they're beholden to their corporate donors. They're old Democratic insiders. So, Bernie, I know you mean well, but here's the real answer. Is single-payer a litmus test? Yes. If Democrats want to win, the answer is yes. They want to keep losing? Sure. No. So I would be a little stronger in my language, but then again, I'm not sitting in Democratic leadership. If I had my way, we would totally remake Democratic leadership, and it would be all principled Justice Democrats. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, Politico has an amazing article that puts the disastrous Trump presidency into perspective. Stay right there, everybody. We'll be right back. Nice fail of audio.
Thank you.
say he gon' pull some strings, so let me check my calendar. I just popped me one of them winter colors, and it boosted my stamina. Now I'm a fucking, I own a Burma stud, guess I just eat Stella. Oh man, I already dropped tarantula. Fuck a challenge, and me hoes ain't got no manners, bro. What's the manners? I keep throwing rubber bandits up. So pull your panties up, cause you fuck like a granny. Fuck, you're just an amateur. The seat for me gon' make this cricket, just try throw the brick at me. I look like half a million worth of heroin when she look at me. But you ain't gotta fuck with me, my nigga, but you stuck with me. But how you call the cops on me, my nigga, you grew up with me. I don't usually do this unless I'm drunk.
Has many angles to it. It's from Politico. Let's do it. Politico has an amazing article that really puts into perspective the disaster that is the Trump presidency. So let's go through it and then I'll break it down. President Donald Trump is not happy with Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and Gary Cohn, director of the National Economic Council, for publicly criticizing his response to violence in Charlottesville, Virginia. But it appears there is little he is planning to do about it, according to people who have spoken to him. The unusually direct challenges from a cabinet secretary and senior administration official seem to make little more than a surface ripple in the swirling melodrama of the Trump White House, even as the president fumed privately about it. Tillerson, when asked over the weekend whether Trump represented American values with his comments, gave a succinct response, quote, "The president speaks for himself." When asked whether he was separating himself from the president's comments, Tillerson noted that he gave a speech to the State Department denouncing hate. Cohn's comments last week, saying the president could do better, came after several days of weighing whether to leave his position, including writing draft resignation letters. The repudiations by Tillerson and Cohn were not nearly as sharp as some other criticisms of the president, who publicly waffled for days on how to respond to neo-Nazis and white supremacists who marched in the streets of Charlottesville and clashed with opposition protesters. Still, said Rich Lowry, editor of National Review, in the normal course of things, a Secretary of State would be fired an hour after saying such a thing on national TV. The president, whose approval ratings have dropped into the 30% range and who has lost a raft of senior staff members, is loath to get rid of anyone right now, one advisor said. Some close to Trump note that he needs Cohn and Tillerson, seen as stabilizing forces in his administration, more than they need him at this point. But he has stewed, this person said, as the comments from his own staff have dominated the news. Trump has repeatedly said that he doesn't feel that others on his staff and Republicans on Capitol Hill are defending him enough. Quote, he feels like when you back down, people will just keep coming at you, the advisor said. Even if he knew he was wrong, I don't think he'd back down. Longtime observers of Trump say he makes it difficult for others to defend him. He often makes incendiary comments only to ratchet up the rhetoric after coming under criticism. Advisors and aides are then in an untenable position, having to decide whether to agree with him and face the backlash or to artfully distance themselves, dodge, or deny. Okay, so there's a lot to say about this. First of all, Donald Trump really does act like a little boy. And I'm not trying to say that as like, you know, like a fucking far left guy cackling and saying, hey, look at this, isn't this fucking crazy? No, I'm saying that as like as an objective analysis of, damn, that's how he acts. So somebody says something that doesn't back him up, and it's like the worst thing in the world. He goes nuts, and people aren't defending me enough. And then, you know, the idea of, oh, if you back down, people will keep coming at you. And then they say, even if he knew he was wrong, he doesn't want to back down. Well, that's like a fucking stubborn child. I don't know any other way to perceive that. That's what that is. An adult goes, you know what, I was incorrect about that. But no, he's like, defend it. And then he drags everybody else down with him. He's like, well, you're in my administration. You have to defend it. Defend the fact that I did a false equivalence between neo-Nazis and KKK members and overwhelmingly peaceful left-wingers. Even people in his own administration are like, come on, man, that's crazy. He's like, do it. And so when Tillerson and Cohn were like, no, this, he could have done better, and Tillerson's comments were even wilder because he was stoic when he said it. Oh, does the president represent American values? The president represents himself. Damn, son. So Trump's like, why won't you defend me? You gotta defend me. So Trump is this, it's like a young kid or like a cliquey high schooler who's like, you know, you ride or die. You're either with me or you're against me. You're either on my team or you're not on my team, bro. You're going to defend me or not? Oh, you're not going to defend me, huh? So you're not going to defend me. I started a random fight with a guy in a bar, and you're not going to jump in and punch a guy in the face for me, huh? That's what it's going to do?
Dude, you're an adult. You're the fucking president of the United States. And they act like these fights are like Real Housewives of D.C. Like, that's what it feels like every time you read this stuff. Now, but here's the other aspect of this story that's incredible. Notice what just happened. I just had to give commentary on a story where I unequivocally side with the CEO of ExxonMobil and a Goldman Sachs lackey. And that is the conundrum of the Trump presidency. And this is actually why the establishment secretly loved the Trump presidency. Because Trump sets up a dynamic where anything and anybody but Trump is viewed as reasonable and the adults in the room. Here's the problem. That's not true. So you get people who are incredible neocons and hawks who want to do intervention everywhere who appear like adults because Trump is such a fucking baby that you go, oh, we need the CEO of ExxonMobil who has a massive financial conflict of interest the world over to make decisions on foreign policy. Trump said repeatedly, we should take the oil from Iraq, which is a giant war crime, stealing natural resources from a sovereign nation. And then he picked ExxonMobil CEO to be his Secretary of State. And now Trump is so bad that people are going, man, I really hope the CEO of ExxonMobil is making the foreign policy decisions and not Trump. Well, that's a win-win for the establishment now, isn't it? Because then you get everybody to go, that CEO of ExxonMobil sure is reasonable. No, he's a fucking corrupt asshole who has the biggest conflict of interest in human history. Gary Cohn. Gary Cohn is a Goldman Sachs lackey. I mean, this is a guy who's rigged policy in favor of Wall Street and wanted to do that forever. I mean, go read the tax plan that he wrote and he released, him and Mnuchin, another guy from Goldman Sachs, by the way. They were the ones who announced Trump's first round of tax proposals. It's all shit that benefits the rich. That's all it is. It biases the rules in favor of Wall Street and multinational corporations and lets them run out the back door with all the money while they shift the tax burden onto the middle class. So, but again, Trump is so bad in situations like this that everybody, you just heard me, I just did commentary where I'm like, man, isn't the Goldman Sachs lackey correct? So that's a win-win for the establishment because you get everybody to agree, man, I hope the ExxonMobil guy and the Goldman Sachs guy are the ones really making the decisions and not Donald Trump. So this is an empire in decline. That's what this is. There's no other way to look at it. You have a petty man-child who's obsessed with personal bickering, you know, he's a real housewife of D.C. You have that guy, and then you have the captains of industry, the CEOs, the Titans, the Goldman Sachs people, the ExxonMobil people, who all reasonable people are now like, gee, I hope they're making the decisions and not Trump because Trump's a baby and they're adults. They may be corrupt adults who will do everything to fuck over the middle class, but hey, at least they're adults. So what a, oh my God, this is terrible, man. This is the best case scenario for the establishment, worst case scenario for the people. And, you know, it's almost like we're watching a bad movie. We're watching a D-list movie, but it's real life. Okay. Next. President Trump is putting police militarization into overdrive. So we got this news yesterday. President Donald Trump will repeal restrictions that former President Barack Obama placed on police access to excess military gear, allowing the federal government to immediately resume handing out free bayonets, grenade launchers, tracked armored vehicles such as tanks, and other equipment to law enforcement departments around the country. Trump will sign an executive order on Monday that repeals the limits Obama placed on the access to some military surplus items in 2015. Obama's move followed the provocative response to the August 2014 unrest in Ferguson, Missouri, where St. Louis County police officers atop armored vehicles pointed sniper rifles at peaceful demonstrators in broad daylight. Policing experts in a report for the Justice Department found that the police actions inflamed tensions and violated constitutional rights. So, of course, Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump, after hearing that, hey, these uber-militarized police violated constitutional rights, they say, great, where do we sign up for more of that? You know, we're law and order, that's what we are, we're law and order. And, of course, by law and order, what we mean is the people we like, so us, people like Joe Arpaio, who Trump just pardoned, law enforcement officials, we get to not abide by law and order. So we get to be criminals and thugs, but since we have the badges and the uniforms, it's okay, and we get to violate constitutional rights of poor white people and black and brown people. That's what they mean by law and order. Every time you hear them say law and order, in your mind, it's immediately substituted with what that means is we get to do whatever we want and declare that it is law and order even when we violate law and order. So they think it's law and order for the police to violate the constitutional rights of peaceful protesters. They go, yeah, that's law and order. You got to listen to the officer. But wait a second, that's not law and order. Law and order would be you following the law as well. But no. In Trump's mind, hey, I just pardoned Joe Arpaio, who was convicted on multiple crimes. But somehow I believe in law and order, even though I literally just pardoned a criminal thug.
So see how they think? You got to tap into the mind of the far right here to understand what's going on. For them, law and order is we do what we want, you fall in line. Law and order for you, for us, we get to violate it and declare it's law and order. And let me ask you a question. When is the military, excuse me, when, how often will there be a situation where police need grenade launchers and tanks? Now, look, don't get me wrong. I don't go uber lefty on this one where, you know, like in Europe, for example, the police don't even carry firearms. Okay, well, that's Europe. Here we have much more lax gun laws. So what are you going to do? You're going to have the police out there with no firearms when the, you know, whatever criminal is out there could have a firearm? No, I don't agree with that. But having said that, do you need literal military gear? No, this is a police force. This isn't, it's not supposed to be an occupying army, which is what it becomes when you give the police fucking grenade launchers and tanks. So would I totally disarm the police? No. But would I give them everything that's available to the military to use in a battle in fucking Fallujah or Kandahar? No. So, and even Rand Paul, to his credit, came out and said, what are you doing? And by the way, this isn't conservative. Rand Paul says, hey, look, I'm a libertarian. If you believe in conservatism, you're supposed to believe in small government. Small government means not arming the police to the teeth to be an occupying army in the streets. We're not looking for martial law. Conservatives are supposed to fear, oh my God, we don't want martial law. We don't want to give the government too much power. But you have the authoritarian brand of conservative that Trump is more aligned with and that Jeff Sessions is definitely more aligned with. And they're like, no, we believe in small government for other things. We believe in small government when it comes to taxes for the rich. We don't want the government taxing the rich more. We believe in big government when it comes to the police. Yes, we want to occupy poor neighborhoods with tanks and fucking grenade launchers and bayonets. What is it, 1928? Bayonets. The fuck are you talking about? So it's just, it's not, it makes the images that come out of the United States look like images from third world nations. You know, when you see police using all these fucking different kinds of military-grade weapons, and you got these peaceful protesters marching, as we've seen time and time again. And it's just the wrong path to go down. I'm not saying you totally disarm the police, but you definitely don't give them military-grade weapons, man. I mean, that is a bad idea. And it also, it shows you their mindset, that in the minds of guys like Trump and Jeff Sessions, when you arm the police to the teeth and when the victims of police brutality shoot through the roof, they don't care. Because, again, in their mind, hey, if the police do it, it's justified by definition. That's what civil asset forfeiture is. Civil asset forfeiture is illegal robbery by cop. They get to take your money and say, or your property, your car, whatever it may be, and say, I am hereby declaring that this was about to be used in a drug deal. They don't have to have any evidence. They could take it, and then they flip the burden of proof onto you, and it's almost impossible for you to get your property back or your money back. So it's just cops can just pull you over and take your shit. And oftentimes, they're allowed to take that and use it for their own police departments. We've covered stories of, you know, police departments adding a whole new break room and having a fucking margarita machine that they got with funds taken through civil asset forfeiture. So we have legalized robbery by cop. And guess what Jeff Sessions did? He increased that. He increased it. He said, yeah, we're going to double down on this approach. So if cops use military-grade equipment and do police brutality, if cops rob you through civil asset forfeiture, it's fine. That doesn't count as a crime, even though there's more property and money stolen through civil asset forfeiture than there is through regular burglary. So cops are robbing people more than robbers are robbing people. But in Jeff Sessions' mind, in Donald Trump's mind, what do you mean? That's not a problem. Now here, let's give these people tanks and fucking grenade launchers. Anything else you want to give them? You want to give them, you know, anti-aircraft missiles. Why not throw in some nuclear weapons while we're at it? Why not? Fuck it, right? You only live once. Chemical weapons, biological weapons. You tell me, man. Hey, there's no holds barred here, right? It's just a bad path to go down, but they're going down that path as fast as possible. Okay. Okay, now, go to Michael Moore. In an interesting comment he made, we'll do this before we take our last break. Michael Moore made a pretty shocking comment this week. It's getting quite a bit of attention. Trump on track for re-election. Wow. He went there. Liberal activist and filmmaker Michael Moore believes President Trump is on track to win re-election in 2020 despite his low approval poll ratings. Moore encouraged Democrats to back a movement to award electoral college votes to the national popular vote winner, saying it was the best way to keep Trump from getting reelected. I should say reappointed, because we will have an even larger population that will vote against him in 2020, Moore said in an interview with Fast Company magazine published Monday. But he will win those electoral states as it stands now. Now, the response to this was very similar to the response when Michael Moore predicted, pretty far out from the election, that Trump would win. I don't know how many of you remember that. He said Trump's going to win, and he gave a very detailed breakdown as to why that is. And everybody laughed at him. Everybody said, oh, Michael Moore, who are you kidding? You're being ridiculous. This guy will never win. He's a reality star buffoon. You know, he's had so many scandals and said so many things in his history and his past. There's so much shit that's unbecoming of a person, of a president. He's so unpresidential that there's no way that he beats the anointed one, Hillary Clinton, who we tried to rig the primary to give it to her over Bernie Sanders. There's no way Hillary's obviously going to win. How'd that go? Michael Moore was 100% right, and he was the first person I saw that predicted it and was like, no, I'm serious. That's what's going to happen. Well, now he's saying pretty far out from the next election, and there's a million things that can happen before then, okay, that would derail this prediction. What he's saying is, as of right now, the smug-ass liberals are out there like, oh, yeah, no matter who we run, we win. Really? Really? Go ahead. Try Tim Kaine. Try fucking Cory Booker. See how it works out. It ain't going to work out, man. Look, Trump is deeply disliked. But the Democrats always severely underestimate how disliked they are. And the Democratic establishment has a habit of propping up the worst of the worst and thinking they're the best of the best. Because the people who are beloved in corporate circles are the people who are despised among Americans. That's Hillary Clinton. Corporate circles love her. They adore her. In D.C. and New York, the media establishment, the Democratic establishment, the moneyed interests. Like, oh, yes, Hillary Clinton, the perfect candidate, if you ask me. She's so likable. And then what happened? Everybody hated her. But they're going to try it again. They're going to do it again. They got to get their shit together. The only way for them to get their shit together is if they start listening to the Democratic base. But they've already proven they're not going to do that because there's a story that comes out every week, which is the corporate Democratic establishment trying to smear the Democratic base more and blame them for Trump. So instead of listening to us, they're spitting in our eye again, which is setting them up for another loss. And then when they lose again, their answer will be, yet again, we got to run further right and get more corporate in order to win. So no matter what happens, the answer is we got to go in the wrong direction further. Their solution is always go further right wing, be more corporate. We're telling you that's not the way to go. So if you listen to Michael Moore here, you're like, oh, please, here he goes again. He was right last time. You were fucking wrong last time. So maybe you listen this time. You can't run Cory Booker. You can't run Tim Kaine. You can't run Hillary Clinton again. You can't run the corporate Democrats. You have to run somebody who's at least somewhat populist. If you don't, you'll lose again, and then at the end of it, you'll go, wow. Who could have seen that coming? Well, Michael Moore fucking saw it coming, and I saw it coming, and there's a million people on the populist left who saw it coming, but you motherfuckers won't listen. So step the fuck aside and let us do our job. JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. Let's do this. Let's win the House. Let's win the Senate. And let's win the presidency when the time comes. Okay. All right, let's take a break when we come back. Got Hurricane Harvey. And another issue on top of the flooding that's just a huge disaster. And Facebook is getting in on the YouTube game. We'll talk about that and much more. Stay right there, guys.
The left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by
by myself. The left. Please don't make me snap you with the left. The left. You will think so one bone drop you with the left. The left.
Alright, y'all, we're back. Welcome back, welcome back. As a result of Hurricane Harvey, there's another danger on top of the insane amounts of flooding. And that's not to downplay the flooding, because the flooding is just unlike anything we've ever seen before. I mean, it really is just a disaster. So many people have had their homes ruined, their lives ruined, people have died. I mean, and there wasn't an evacuation order, which again is just unconscionable. But here's the other danger. Look at this. Harris County, Texas, is home to around 4.5 million people and more than 40% of the nation's petrochemical capacity. And thanks to Hurricane Harvey, which is now a tropical storm, it could get pounded with up to 50 inches of rain by the end of this week. That unprecedented rainfall and the flooding that accompanies it has forced oil and gas companies in the region to shut down critical infrastructure in the face of a potential environmental catastrophe. At least 10 refineries on the Texas coast have shut down, and whenever a refinery has to be closed or restarted, especially in emergency situations, its emissions far exceed what's typically allowed. Upsets or sudden shutdowns can release large plumes of sulfur dioxide or toxic chemicals in just a few hours, exposing downwind communities to peak levels of pollution that are much more likely to trigger asthma attacks and other respiratory systems. I think I'm supposed to say problems. A 2012 study by the Environmental Integrity Project found. Houston area resident Stephanie Thomas told Houston Press, something powerful hit her nostrils early Sunday, describing the smell like burnt rubber with a hint of something metallic thrown in. Brian Paris, a nonprofit worker who often visits Manchester, a community that lies near several chemical plants, told the paper he was certain the pollution was affecting him. It was weird because I was getting a heartache and a scratchy throat, like the one I get when I take people on toxic tours of Manchester. But I was sitting at home, Paris said. The stuff was getting sucked into my house through the window air conditioning units. Air Alliance Houston estimates that the area's petrochemical plants will release more than 1 million pounds of air pollution as a result of Harvey. ExxonMobil's, oh, damn, 1 million pounds of air pollution as a result of Harvey. ExxonMobil's Baytown facility, the largest petrochemical complex in the U.S., sustained damage in the storm and has been shut down. Company officials told CNN they're trying to minimize emissions, but according to ExxonMobil's filings with the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, those emissions are likely to last until Friday. In April this year, a federal judge ordered ExxonMobil to pay $20 million in fines because of the Baytown complex illegally spewed 8 million pounds of hazardous chemicals over a five-year period. Environment Texas says Baytown is likely emitting chemicals like 1,3-butadiene, benzene, and ethylene, all of which can pose significant health hazards given large enough exposure. And people stuck breathing toxic fumes can't simply go elsewhere because of the flooding and other dangers posed by Harvey. They're effectively stuck where they are. Air pollution is one of the unseen dangers of the storm, stated Dr. Elena Kraft, a senior health scientist at Environmental Defense Fund. Poor air quality puts the most vulnerable among us, like children and seniors, at risk for asthma, heart attacks, strokes, and other health problems. Wow, man. Holy shit. That's insane. You know, it always, when it comes to nuclear facilities, and when it comes to chemical facilities, what I'm always amazed by is the seeming lack of preparation for catastrophic scenarios. Now, it's actually not true that they don't have, you know, measures in place, but the measures in place are obviously not sufficient. Look what happened in Hiroshima. Look what happened in Chernobyl. Look what happened with, I think it was Five Mile Island. Wait, did I say Hiroshima? That's not what I meant to say. I meant to say Fukushima. There you go. So that's with nuclear plants. Now with
chemical plants, apparently the same thing is happening. They're like, oh, well, when you shut down the critical infrastructure and then fire it back up, you're basically poisoning everybody in sight. Well, then why the fuck did you make it the way that you made it where that's possible? Why wouldn't you have effective regulation in place in order to make sure that even in a worst-case scenario, this doesn't happen? Well, you already know the answer to that. Because these companies lobby the government, and they basically get their way. Hey, we don't want to do these burdensome regulations because they're expensive, and building the infrastructure for them is hard, and in order to do the research and development to figure out how we can refire up these plants without spewing toxic chemicals into the atmosphere and unsustainable levels, it's too hard. It's too hard. It costs too much money. We don't want to do it. And hey, I mean, think about it. Are we really going to have that many terrible situations? Are we really going to have that many Category 4, Category 5 hurricanes, tropical storms, or whatever that could really end up being a catastrophic situation for the people in the area? No. Well, sometimes you get them, especially with climate change. Now they're happening more and more often. The once in a hundred year storm, or every 500 year storms are happening way more often now. So the infrastructure has to catch up to the reality, but we don't have that because we don't have effective regulation because corporations have bought the government. So this is where we are, you know. Oh, what are you gonna do? We had to shut down the chemical plants and we refire them up and you poison everybody. But it is what it is. No, not it is what it is. Fucking fix it or else you shouldn't exist. If you don't have the effective regulation to make it safe, then don't talk to me about how you want to set up the place in the first place. It should be totally safe, and you should be planning for the worst of the worst scenarios, because given enough time, the worst of the worst scenario happens. It's so crazy that you have climate change happening, clearly, and it's driven, at least in part, by man and the emissions we're putting out there. And the area in Texas that got hit is, of course, the oil capital of the U.S. and apparently the chemical capital, too, or at least a big area for chemicals. And that's what got hit. You know, all the money that goes towards rebuilding after this disaster, it needs to go to the people in Texas. It needs to go to the people who were affected in Texas. Not a dime should go towards the oil companies and the chemical companies, because they helped create this problem in the first place, didn't set up effective regulation to begin with, tried to skirt the regulations, made it unsafe. Now people are suffering the consequences, and you bet your ass they're going to try to get in on some of that sweet emergency relief money. The answer to that, in my book, is fuck no. Okay. All right, now, a story that made me tear up. This story 100% made me tear up. The Miami Herald and the Idaho Statesman covered the story of Betsy Winkler. Now, her husband has Alzheimer's, and she's doing her best to take care of him, but she's in a tough situation, so let's watch.
I apologize. I stopped at McDonald's, and I got a dollar hamburger and a dollar soda. Oh! You don't go out very often on 30 bucks a month.
According to a study by United Way, more than one in three Idaho families struggle to afford basic needs.
When his bill goes up, I gotta have the money to pay for it.
3.5 years ago, Betsy's husband, David, was diagnosed with Alzheimer's.
Oh, it was rough. The stress was getting to me, and I got sick. We made plans for surgery, and I thought, well, I don't have anybody to watch him. I put him in the home a week before our 31st wedding anniversary.
Without any major income, Betsy had to plan for life ahead.
I spent 6 months slowing down my business and putting that up for sale and preparing for what lied ahead. I'm trying to live on as little as possible.
That includes budgeting herself to $30 a month.
The extra money I can save back to pay for his care. And as he worsens, it will get more.
She manages this by cutting food costs. With the help of a Treasure Valley grocery store, she picks up its recently expired food for free.
No corn today, but lots of mushrooms.
However, she isn't the only one in need of lower food costs. She delivers most of her haul to a local food bank.
There's 215 houses here, and most of them are families.
One of these families is Keith Hartman.
Daddy, that's who they do so much to help people. My life is not even as busy as hers, but she spends a lot of time in doing things for other people.
Despite her own situation, Keith said Betsy gives a lot in a subdivision that has very little.
She strikes it off like it's casual, but the things that she does is over and beyond and very helpful.
But between the food bank, visits with David, and caring for her family, Betsy lives unsure of what the future holds.
How long do you plan for? I have to be prepared to cover his bills because nothing's going to stop me from taking care of the man I love. He is the light of my life, and I'll do anything I have to for him.
So she lives on $30 a month, and she eats expired food to try to pay for her husband's care. For a long time, she was able to take care of her husband herself. He had Alzheimer's, has Alzheimer's, and he started out, you know, just like being forgetful, and then it became wandering around inside the house, and then it became like opening the door at 3 a.m. in the morning and wandering around outside, and he would start to get dressed for a job he hadn't had in years at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning and stuff, and she couldn't, it wasn't possible for her to take care of him anymore, so she needed an assisted living facility. So she put him in an assisted living facility, and Medicaid doesn't cover that. They cover other things that are somewhat similar, but not exactly like an assisted living facility. She makes $50,000 a year between Social Security that he gets, the pension he gets, some money that he gets from being a veteran, and they have various sources of income, her work. But think about that. They make $50,000 a year, which is basically, I think it was the median or the average, probably the median in Idaho. But the cost of care for what he's going through with Alzheimer's and needing to be in an assisted living facility is basically more than that, costs more than that. So as a result of that, she lives on $30 a month and eats expired food. And she's got nothing. And she's in dire financial straits, trying to make it work, and it's just really difficult. And, you know, you look at this story and you think, come on, why aren't our tax dollars going to help people like this? Like, the cost of him being in an assisted living facility is through the roof and is too much of a burden for her to bear, even with a middle class income. We have all this money, $7 trillion going to Iraq, and we have nothing to show for it. If anything, it made the problem worse. $2 trillion in Afghanistan. We spend $100 billion every year maintaining 900 military bases around the world. $4 billion a year goes to ExxonMobil as a subsidy for research and development. The list goes on and on. $80 billion a year to the big banks. Why? So we give corporate welfare to Wall Street. We give money out the wazoo to the military-industrial complex. And we have people like this who are barely scraping by eating expired food just so that they can take care of their loved one. I want my tax money to go to people like Betsy Winkler. Why wouldn't an assisted living facility be 100% funded by the government? I mean, that's healthcare. That's what that is. Well, you're not technically in the right kind of facility, and the facility is a little more hands-on, the one that you're in, and I don't know, the Medicaid doesn't pick it up, and fucking fix this garbage, man. This is grotesque. Why wouldn't it cover? Why wouldn't this be covered? Cover it. If you poll thousands of people, it's going to come back over 90% of the American people say, yes,
I'd like my tax money to go there. Democrat, Republican, Independent, if we're going to have taxes, and we are, and we're going to have a government, we are, well, then where are we going to put the money to? I'm telling you, over 90% of people would say, send it there. But no, she lives on $30 a month, eats expired food to try to take care of her husband. It's fucking heartbreaking, man. It really is. This shouldn't be the situation that we're in what's supposed to be the richest country on earth. Okay. All right, now, let's switch gears. I got 15 minutes left. I got two stories left. I'm going to go to some religious stuff, and then we'll get to some free speech issues. Okay. Christian fundamentalist Brian Fisher weighed in on the recent Confederate monument and Confederate flag scandals, and he has a unique take.
A lot of attention right now to get rid, a lot of effort to get rid of the Confederate flag. There's a public school system in North Carolina. They have completely banned the Confederate flag because it is divisive. So no more Confederate flag in the school district in North Carolina. Why? Because it is divisive. Well, let me mention another symbol that in my judgment, in my mind, is just as divisive. So if we're going to ban the Confederate flag because it is divisive, how about we ban the LGBT flag at school?
Oh.
We're going to ban the Confederate flag at school because it creates division, because it arouses division, because it is offensive to people, because it so violates their most deeply held values about human sexuality. I propose that everywhere where the Confederate flag is banned, that we propose that along with it, at the same time, that the LGBT rainbow flag be banned at exactly the same time for exactly the same reasons. It is offensive. It is contrary to our most deeply held values. It divides people. It does not bring them together. It's time to have the LGBT flag banned right alongside the Confederate flag. If we're going to ban one, I submit that we need to ban the other.
Just stop. Brian Fisher has an amazing ability to bring everything back to sexuality. I wonder why. I wonder why he's always going back to, and the gays. They're so immoral, and they're so bad, and they're so wrong, and I'm so against them. I promise I didn't just suck 32 dudes off. Wait, what? What? Okay, so here's where he's being a jackass. The Confederate flag and the Confederate monument scandals, it's all about public property. It's all about, hey, we have Confederate monuments on public property that you have black taxpayers paying for the upkeep on monuments that represent their enslavement and their oppression and Jim Crow and second-class citizenship. Hey, you have a Confederate flag flying in, I think it was North Carolina or South Carolina, in the courthouse. In the courthouse. So why the fuck are you flying the flag of the people who seceded from the United States of America, did the opposite of law and order in the place, the courthouse, where you uphold law and order? That doesn't make any sense. That makes no sense whatsoever. So we're talking about public land. Now, you want to fly a Confederate flag on your own property, by all means, you have every right to do it. It's a free country. It's America. Go right ahead. You want to put it on your car? You want to put it on your own property? Nobody can stop you. Nobody should be able to stop you. Should you put it in public places? Go fuck yourself. Go fuck yourself. That's ridiculous. So that's the scandal over the Confederate monuments and the Confederate flags. He's just muddying the waters and trying to, and the gays, the fucking LGBT flag. Well, look, as far as I know, I haven't seen any, there's no epidemic of people flying the LGBT flag on public property. Most places I've seen the LGBT flag,
It's on private property. But furthermore, look, they're not equal. Those things are not equal. Let's stop trying to make them equal. You have a right on private property to fly either one of them. You fly whatever the fuck you want, okay? But on public property, don't fly the Confederate flag. And the LGBT flag, you know, it's not the same as the Confederate flag. Sorry, it's just not. That represents equality. That represents the fight back against oppression of gay people, which has been going on for a very long time. The Confederate flag does not represent equality. It represents the opposite. So don't, it's like saying, you know, oh, so you're saying I can't fly a Nazi flag. Well, then you can't fly an American flag. Those aren't the same thing, though. They represent different things. Why are you trying to act like it's all equal? It's not all equal. That's not equal. Now, again, on private property, fly whatever you want. I don't care. But public property, if you fly the Confederate flag, no, not at all. Represents traitors, represents oppression of groups of people. No. LGBT flag? I mean, if the people vote for it in the legislature to fly the flag, the majority of people want it, I see no problem with it. Whereas I do see a problem with it with the Confederate flag. So it's just, it's not the same. He's trying to muddy the waters and make it the same. Ridiculous. And he's playing sloppy and loose on purpose. He's trying to equate things that you can't equate because he has no other argument. So he's just, oh, yeah, well, I don't like that flag. And if you don't like that flag, I don't like that flag. I don't even believe you. I think you do like that flag. Okay. Okay, final story of the day here. Talk a little bit about Facebook and what they're doing. And then Kyle and Corin tomorrow, of course. And back for the live show on Thursday. You know the deal. Okay. Facebook is getting in on the same game YouTube is currently thriving at, which is censorship. Facebook to ban advertising for pages sharing fake news articles. In a statement released on their site on Monday, Facebook took a strong stance against the spread of fake news on the social platform. According to the press release, Facebook will begin barring pages that repeatedly share stories marked as false by third-party fact-checking organizations from advertising on the platform. False news is harmful to our community, the statement reads. It makes the world less informed and erodes trust. To curb the spread of fake news, Facebook intends to disrupt economic incentives to create false news, along with creating products that counters its spread and helping inform users on media literacy. Okay, so I dislike this for many reasons. First of all, how smug is that? We're going to help inform users on media literacy. In other words, us over here at Facebook, we are an authority on what's real and what's fake, so we're going to help inform you on media literacy. Now, I'm not saying most people have it figured out on what's real and fake when it comes to news, but neither does fucking Facebook. And, like, okay, Mark Zuckerberg is thinking about running for president. What, you think Mark Zuckerberg on his site is going to allow really critical news articles about him? See, this is the problem. Who's going to watch the Watchmen? Like, oh, we got to stop the spread of fake news, but who's deciding what's fake and what's not fake? Now, again, that doesn't mean that there aren't stories that aren't objectively true or false, but it just means, who do you fucking trust to be the person who makes that decision? I certainly don't trust Facebook. I don't trust their third-party fact-checkers, because I've seen many things that fact-checkers have incorrectly assessed. It's happened repeatedly. It's not like, oh, it happened, you know. I guess most of the time they're probably right, but there's a solid 20% of the time or 30% of the time where it's up in the air as to how accurate they are and how they, like PolitiFact, for example, likes to have this fucking shitty middle ground where they say something, oh, half true or, you know, mostly false, and then they, like their reasoning, you could disagree with their reasoning and or the conclusion they came to. So it's not like
It's not like you have a monopoly on truth, Facebook. But they act like, oh, please. And then also, like, the idea we're not going to allow advertisements for the ones that we think are fake news. But what if the fucking company says, no, I want to advertise on the people who you're calling fake news? What then? We're not going to allow you. Well, what the fuck? What the fuck? The company has every right to say, I want to advertise with them. But Facebook's going to say, no, we disagree with you making your own free decision. And then, guys, I mean, let's be serious here. This is, like, for example, after when Iraq was happening, you do know that everybody across the board in the respectable establishment press said, yeah, Saddam has weapons of mass destruction. Saddam is linked to 9/11. If all of the so-called respectable outlets said that, and they did, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, you name them, everybody said that, and then somebody posts a link on Facebook way back then, let's say, I don't know if Facebook was around then, but just hypothetical here, Facebook, if they had the system in place, would pull down the article. No, we're not going to let you run the article that says Saddam doesn't have weapons of mass destruction and isn't linked to 9/11, because that's fake news. But that's not correct. Now, again, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, like, oh, isn't Alex Jones wonderful when he spreads legitimate fake news all of the fucking time? No, that's not what I'm saying. And those guys are odious to public discourse. But we either have a system where you let all the information out there and let people choose for themselves, or you have people regulate the news. But when you have people regulate it, you're always going to get a biased version. You're always going to get their version of events, because it's not like whoever's making the decisions here are objective. The people who make the decisions have their own biases, have their own problems, have their own slants. So either you allow everything out there, and yes, you allow the monetization of it and let people choose for themselves. That's called freedom. Or you have regulators who will get shit wrong, and you can incorrectly crack down on many true stories and outlets that are giving the truth, but you just think it's fake. Again, guys, think about with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. All the things we know as a matter of fact happened behind the scenes, had the DNC tip the scales against Bernie Sanders. Let me ask you, you think Facebook, in that circumstance, is going to say if they had this system set up? Of course. Let all the news get out there about how Bernie, they tipped the scales against Bernie. They're not going to do that. They're going to say all of it, oh, it's fake news. It's fake news to say that they tried to hide the debates, but that's not fake news. The WikiLeaks, you think they're going to allow the running of WikiLeaks? The WikiLeaks are accurate. They're true. But in the wake of it, what was the establishment smear to try to get people to not cover them? Oh, there's fakes. There's fakes mixed in with them. And so what did they do? Oh, don't cover it. Don't cover it. That's what the establishment press did. What do you think Facebook's going to do? They're going to allow with the running of the factual WikiLeaks information? No, they're going to crack down on it and then go, we stopped it because it's fake news. So you can't trust them. You can't fucking trust them. And then also, independent outlets like me get left behind in situations like this because I'm not respectable. I'm not establishment. So I would hold up my record of telling the truth and giving real information against anybody. But when you have asshole establishment idiots making the decision as to what's allowed and what's not allowed, well, I don't know, he curses a lot, and sometimes he's too anti-establishment, and let's fucking demonetize him, ban him. We already know that's the case because YouTube temporarily put me on a block list. You guys got me off of it because you raised fucking holy hell as a result of it. But then now we're in a permanent lower rung of monetization where we get shitty ads, and oftentimes the topics we cover have, you know, a broad crackdown on them, which is why you always see those funky little, you know, symbols over the letters I put in there because I'm trying to skirt the demonetization algorithm and whatnot. So for somebody like me, we're already feeling the pressure because YouTube is trying to demonetize us as much as possible. And then with this Facebook thing, you think there's not going to be innocent parties like myself and others like me, Jimmy Dore, Humanist Report, David Pakman Show, who aren't roadkill, who aren't collateral damage? Yes, we are going to be caught up in this, and we are going to be collateral damage. But that's the point. Is it really all that much collateral damage? No, it might be the point. To lump in people like me with guys like Alex Jones and whatever. So this is horrible and we should all be against. Is what you want on your Facebook feed the only things that are allowed to be fucking CNN and outlets like it? No. No, right? So we got to oppose this, man. Who's going to watch the Watchmen? Who's going to watch the Watchmen? That's the question. And remember, we're hurting. All the other outlets I just named, the YouTube outlets are hurting. If you like them, this is where Patreon's such a lifesaver, man. For us, it's patreon.com/secular talk. If you give $2 a month, that means the world, because we now, the overwhelming majority of our funding comes from you in grassroots funding through Patreon. That's the way that we make this work, because there's no way that we're going to rely on YouTube to be a system like it was, where it was more of a meritocracy, more of, hey, the more views you get, the more money you make. Now, that system is dead and gone. That system has collapsed. And, you know, people like myself and David Pakman, Jimmy Dore, Humanist Report, and the rest of us, we're the ones who got really screwed as a result of it. So since that's the model that doesn't work anymore, now's where Patreon's so important. So if you like them, if you like this show, consider just a tiny monthly donation, because that's what keeps us going. And I don't think people realize just how much that helps us. Because with stories like this and the direction that we're moving in here when it comes to free speech, free expression, and freedom of the press, this is censorship by another name. And it ain't coming directly from the government. It's coming from the corporate overlords, and we have to fight back against it. Okay, I'm out of time, guys. I love you. We will be back on Kyle and Corin tomorrow, and then we will be back for the live show on Thursday. All right, love you guys, and we'll see you tomorrow.